This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I've been asked to say a few words about quality, ensuring access to quality services for patients, service user carers, and also about how we might try and embed quality into our procurement processes. Many of you went to the same presentation skills course as me. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Then tell them again. So this is me telling you what I'm going to tell you. Briefly, a little reflection on quality because it means so many things to so many people. I want to talk about our kind of commissioning behaviours and the impact that I think they have. I want to encourage you to do business with people who do quality. I'm going to tee John up by saying a little bit about how important workforce is in terms of care and health services. And want to end just with some brief reflections about creating the conditions for others to do the purchasing. And with the advent of personalisation, that's what we'll all be doing in future, I would suggest. Okay, quality, what does it mean? Now, you can do a degree course in this, and I can't do it justice in one slide. Whether it be a kind of total quality management approach, some of the Kaizen that's come from Japanese manufacturing around continuous improvement, etc. I want to suggest that in our business there are probably four main strands. There may be others, but these are four that I want you to think about. The first is customer satisfaction, and I put it at the top deliberately, and I've used the word customer deliberately as well. You may be more comfortable with phrases like patient, client, service user, carer, but when thinking about quality, I want you to think about the notion of a customer and what a customer expects, and to suggest to you, in terms of those people that we seek to serve, there's a set of expectations and values there that you would have whenever you're a customer that would apply when you're looking to procure services as well. Make sure that in your specification, in your evaluation, in your decision, you are paying attention to what people who use services and their carers think. In health settings, you've got things like patient-reported outcome measures. We'll talk about degrees of choice and control, and we'll look at a range of attitudinal issues in this because we all know the complaints, feedback and everything else is very much about staff attitude. And be very clear about how this stuff influences your decision-taking process in terms of contract award and the way in which you work with providers to seek to improve quality later on. Too often I hear people saying that's a bit subjective and it's not absolute and you can't be definitive about it. I just want to encourage you to have the confidence to hold it as one useful source of information and to take some rounded judgments based on it, rather to expend a lot more energy trying to refine it and make it absolute. When you think about it alongside the outputs, those kind of technical measures that we all have in whatever it is that we're commissioning and procuring, that's another one. And the kind of outputs that you'll have there, I guess for me, if we're commissioning a range of home-based or home care services for local people in Enfield, if they don't turn up when they said they were going to and they don't stay for as long as they were going to, then there are lots of people who are understandably dissatisfied about that. And we probably get more complaints about those two components of the service rather than about the difference it actually made, which we'll be trying to take you on then to make sure that you think about outcomes, being very clear about what it is that you're trying to achieve. So if you are commissioning across your local strategic partnership an intervention that is about helping people recovering from mental illness to return to employment, and as part of that you've got a range of interventions that are about providing help, providing support, job brokerage, providing some individual one-to-one time, if all of those output boxes have been ticked, yet still almost everybody going through the programme is not entering meaningful employment, you need to reflect upon whether it's money well spent, and you need to be very challenging about whether it really is the difficult economic climate and the absence of jobs. And think about how it is that you look to incentivise the achievement of outcomes in terms of your relationships. And finally, to pick on Ian's kind of theme about quality versus cost, I think you need to make sure that there is sustainable cost effectiveness, not the kind of contract where somebody's chucked a load of money at it up front and delivered you some whiz-bang stuff in the first year that you're going to pay for over the odds in the remaining 2, 4, 10 years of the contract, or indeed something that you can't afford because it's not making a difference in terms of the outcomes, so people's level of dependency and need isn't reducing as a result of the interventions. So to think about the definite relationship between cost and quality, but think about it in a sustainable way over the medium and longer term. Some commissioning behaviours that I would kind of encourage in terms of my background and the stories that have been shared across London. The first of which is to place some emphasis on settling price early, being hard, negotiating, getting it right, but then moving the rest of your relationship with your service providers to one that talks about quality and outcomes and keeps talking about quality and outcomes. If you're a commissioner who keeps carping about odd bits around the price, that will get the same behaviour back from your providers. Be clear about the real added value and the real differences. I'm not saying go easy on cost. I'm just saying be clear about what really matters. Said already that you need to look to incentivise quality improvements. There are many boroughs, including my own, that do that in terms of their contracts with residential and nursing care providers. It can be linked to some of the work that Cynthia and the CQC do around star ratings. It can be more refined and more developed than just the simple star rating message. But again, be willing to incentivise that gain and that improvement in quality, and be willing not to reward and to change and do your business elsewhere when quality issues, concerns, especially safeguarding ones, come to the fore. The next thing that I want to encourage is about being risk aware and making sure that you're explicit and shared about that. Lots of procurement negotiations are about risk. Who has it? How's it shared? Be it the TUPE around staff transfer and various other things. And it will often mean a lot of people going into a relationship where behind closed doors, one side's done its evaluation of risk and each of the potential providers has done it as well. The mature relationships look to bring those discussions together to understand what it is that presents risk to both sides and to see what you can do to eliminate it and, crucially, to take the cost of it out of your transactions as well. The concept around supplier relationship management, some really good work that's starting to be done at London councils with major suppliers. People like Care UK providing health and social care services in London, and people like Viola who are doing a range of kind of waste and other large-scale public services in a number of boroughs, where if you look for the win-win together in the longer term, you can genuinely reduce costs as well as improve the quality of services for local people. It would be rare for any director of social care talking about quality and procurement not to pause on the issue of safeguarding. And actually what I want to suggest to you is that probably the greatest intervention that you can make to improve risks associated with safeguarding is to get it right first time in terms of the people that you do business with and the quality of care that you commission. Yes, we can follow up, and we will always spend our time follow up learning from and applying that learning in future. But paying real attention to issues around service quality, workforce quality, and the management of risk and safeguarding within your procurement processes are central to trying to ensure that we protect people from abuse as best we can and we create the conditions in which we can respond more effectively. Now, there are a group of people who have made a profession out of procurement, and there are some exceptional individuals in it. But the world is changing in terms of personalisation, and it won't be a host of people in your back offices working out very lengthy and detailed contract negotiations who are influencing how much business gets done with each of your local care providers as much as the decisions that local people with their personal budgets will take in future. So the shift is about how can we create the conditions in which individuals can make an informed choice, and crucially, where quality can be as central to the choices that they make as you and I would want it to be. Now, this is my bit about encouraging you to do business with people who do quality. In Enfield, about 6 years ago, we had real concerns about the quality of home care services. You will have seen the Panorama programmes that have shown there are even greater concerns elsewhere in the country, and indeed many of you may have them as well. Our members were understandably concerned, and the Adult Social Services Scrutiny Committee did a really serious look, went and did a number of visits, talked to the contractors, a protracted piece of work over a number of months. And some of the officers got a serious kicking about the concerns that were going on at that time. And I can remember a discussion with one of my former bosses where I was encouraging her to take it on the chin and to wear it, because it would change members' understanding about the nature of the issues, the risks associated with it. And the next time we came to recommend a contract award to members, they would be really searching about how we were assuring quality, not just price. And I'm really pleased that we've got a group of members in Enfield who've been championing exactly that issue and are doing so again as we enter the subsequent renewal of that contract some 5 years later. Organisations who do quality don't need you to have an army of people checking up on them, because they do it systematically themselves. And they will show you their comparators, their benchmark information. They will show you their accreditations, a list of things that are along the bottom. The really good ones will tell you that they've got an independent organisation in doing their quality assurance and giving their organisation that assurance for them. Why on earth would you repeat the transaction cost of employing a host of people double-checking on that? Yes, you'll want some assurance, but where you've got that kind of independence in their processes, it will really help you. And the very best will have their local patient organisations or their local user or carer organisations coming in and doing that in an integral way as well. Really interesting example up in Warrington, where something called Quality Checkers and some adults with learning disabilities have been trained to visit their supported living schemes for adults with learning disabilities, and the richness of the feedback that they're able to get about what really matters to the people receiving support in those schemes are quite different to what traditional means of trying to evaluate procurement activity will offer you. Range of kind of accreditation schemes down the bottom, as well as the information that we helpfully get from CQC and others in terms of the quality of social care provision. PICASO, for those of you who don't know it, is a third sector one that provides a very helpful assurance framework where you're doing business with third sector providers. You want also people who do quality to show that they've got the triggers, that they escalate issues and they resolve them and they're responsive. You'll know as senior people in your organisations, it's usually when something's going awry that it's coming across your desk, and it's a bit worrying if by the time it comes across my desk there isn't evidence that the service provider has come across it and is taking some serious action in relation to it as well. And what you'll always want to see is that they don't just address the issue, they come back about how the organisational learning has been embedded, and that you too then take that learning into your next procurement activity. John's going to say much more about workforce, but a couple of things. Social care especially, nothing defines it like the quality of those wonderful people who go out and provide frontline care services every day. A couple of quotes that I've paraphrased. First of which, imagine yourself doubly incontinent and needing somebody to come into your home to help you get up, washed, dressed, change your incontinence pads each day. The dignity, the respect, the interpersonal skills shown by the individual that come in and do that every day will have a profound impact on your sense of self-esteem and your well-being. And remember that when you're making procurement decisions about the organisations that you're going to ask to go in to those very personal settings every day. I'd also say, and CQC will kind of bear this out in terms of a lot of their learning, especially in residential and nursing care, the local manager is absolutely pivotal to the experience of the residents there. And you may find one or two real kind of stars in organisations, or at times of difficulty you might want to be insisting on key person clauses in your contracts. They're commonplace in the private sector in terms of major industry and business and other things. There's no reason why they can't have a more significant role in health and social care as well. And also, make sure you evaluate those key HR metrics. What do you know about staff turnover, recruitment, retention, the amount an organisation spends on training, whether it's engaged with your local Skills for Care partnership, and what you do in terms of the funding you can access around workforce in the sector to make a difference as well. Because at the end of the day, it's a people business. Some 80% of the costs involved associated directly with people, and certainly all of the feedback associated directly with the people. So future commissioning and quality. How can we create the conditions in which others make the purchasing decision and they think about quality? The learning from personal pilot budgets in social care up and down the country is very much that it's re-energising the local walking economy, people within the community that individuals know and trust coming in and providing care and support in a whole host of wonderful new and flexible ways. But that's not without risk. So what is it that we will do in terms of encouraging accreditation, training, making sure that there's availability of references, feedback on personal assistance? We've already got that website knocking around, Rate My Personal Assistant, which is the latest kind of online way of getting feedback directly. It's the kind of Rate My Teacher gone into social care, if you like. And always look to see if you can create ways where quality is central to purchasing decisions. So one of the things that many boroughs, including Enfield, Kent, many others have done, is introduce e-cards, electronic payment systems, so that we load it up with somebody's individual budget, and there's a host of registered or approved suppliers that card can be used with in terms of people purchasing their own care, etc. But again, understand where individuals will make decisions and what quality means to them, so that you can make sure within your local community and your local market that choice is available to them. But fundamentally, I would suggest that we need to create conditions where people who provide services know that their future will utterly depend upon what the people who use those services think of the quality of what they offer. That's how most organisations thrive or fail, and we need to make it much more the case for providers of health and social care services in the future. Thank you.